Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena.
Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya. So, we can fit a lot of devotees in here. And it's good to be back in this transcendental home. Anything that's used in Krishna service becomes transformed into spiritual energy. Actually, all energy comes from Krishna, so it's all his energy, whether we consider it internal or external. The only thing that demarcates it, separates it, is consciousness. And when we connect it through consciousness, that is, our intention is to use it in Krishna service, then it retains its original quality of being transcendental. If you put an iron rod in fire and you leave it there, it will transform from being an iron rod into fire. In a similar way, any of the things that we now have or will obtain in the future that we engage in Krishna service also become transcendentalized. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmarpanam Brahmahavir Brahmagnau Brahmanohutam Brahmaiva Tena Gantavyam Brahmakarma Samadhina. Confirming that whatever things are used for the sacrifice, meaning they're meant for the pleasure of Krishna, those things become spiritual. They turn into Brahman. And that applies not just to so-called gross material things, but also to one's talents, to philosophical systems, one's academic learning. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada Muni, instructing Srila Vyasadeva, says the same thing. How does the verse start? What? The verse. The first line. Idam hi pumsam tapasa shrutasya va shristasya suktasya tabhudi datayo avitrutarta kavivir nirupito yad utama shloka gunarna varnanam. Thank you. Narada Muni is saying, whatever sacrifices, whatever learning, whatever kind of intelligent pursuit you're engaged in, if it's connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, ultimately he says that the perfection of these things culminates in describing the beauty and the pastimes of Krishna. And therefore everything can be used in Krishna's service. And when it is, then it's not a burden, and it also becomes transcendentalized, and therefore it's not only not a burden, but it becomes a source of liberation for us. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's brilliant movement brought to us through the great acharyas, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, is just for us. Because here we are in the middle of Silicon Valley. Well, I don't know if this is still technically Silicon Valley. But we're all in the orbit here in the Greater Bay Area, even Sacramento. It's here for Sacramento. We're all in the midst of a very developed Western civilization. And what to do with that? Srila Bhaktisiddhanta didn't recoil from that. He embraced it full on. In fact, demonstratively, he showed up at Radhakund with his disciples riding in a very fancy car. The best car you could get. It would be like coming in a Tesla now. Dressed in modern clothing. He had his disciples wearing patent leather shoes and very up-to-date suits. And his intention was to put forward this idea that the perfection of renunciation is not in backing off from material things. As Rupa Goswami himself says, anasaktasya vishayam yatarhum upayunjita Nirbandha Krishna Sambande Yuktam Vairagya Muchite Prapanchit Kattaya Budhya Hari Sambandhi Vastani Mumukshabi Prityago Vairagyam Paugakatyate. That everything that's within our purview must be used for the service of Krishna. When it is, it's properly engaged and reconnected to the source, and therefore becomes transcendentalized. And this is what is called renunciation. In fact, if you have material things, that includes advancement in learning. If you know how to manage things, for instance, let's say you're an expert in supply chain management. Anyone? Anyone? We're looking for a few. And you don't utilize it to transfer, for instance, books, transcendental books, from one place to the next. You don't use your intelligence to see how you can expand the distribution of transcendental literatures through using that. Then it's not fully transcendentalized. It hasn't become fully utilized, and therefore not using it is a kind of false renunciation. Therefore, Narada Muni is pointing out, and as Krishna does, that while we're in matter, while we're mixed up in it, the means for liberation is to use those very same things in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Narada compares it to taking a thorn out with a thorn. And when you do that, then it's very practical as well, because no one can artificially renounce the world. We are used to living in a certain environment, in a natural stage of life, and we can stay in that, but at the same time transfer the use of all the things that we have to the Sankirtan movement. And as we do, divest ourselves of the idea that these things are for my own happiness. One of the prominent ideas is that somehow or other, through hard work, acquiring knowledge and so forth, I will be able, and money of course, I will be able to find a situation in which I'll just be comfortable and cruise for the rest of my life. That won't happen. It doesn't happen because of the inexorable laws of material nature and the force of time, which is constantly eroding our ability to stay in one place or to maintain whatever we have. Therefore, an intelligent person who comes in contact with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement can very easily divest him or herself of these assets by using them for Krishna, especially for spreading the Sankirtan movement. Therefore, a beautiful house like this, when used as a base, a covert base, to hide transcendental literatures. We'll, within the basement, if we go down in the basement, we'll find a book room. It's behind a secret bookcase. You open it up. On the outside bookcase, it only has books about C++. And what's that other one called? Java, yeah, Java books. And but if you push on it in the right place, what is it called? Bytalk? Python. And you open it, you'll find a cellar full of transcendental literatures. This is subversive, actually. And so, it's a boon for the whole world. And anyone can participate in the Sankirtan movement and transfer one's assets. We have the assets that Prabhupada mentions in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, which is our attention. Generally, we're trained to place our attention on mundane stories and news. But he says that the process of Krishna consciousness is advanced by transferring our attention towards the stories of the transcendental literature. If one reads Bhagavatam, one will find there's never a dull moment. From chapter to chapter, your hair will be standing on end, and you'll be thinking, I've never heard such stories in my life. In fact, people try to imitate these things, but the truth is stranger than fiction. Pushkar Prabhu told me once he was distributing Back to Godhead magazines, and in a parking lot, and a Western man came up to him. He was elderly, and a little bit of a curmudgeon, means he's kind of cranky. And he said, "Let me see what you're selling here." And he started going through the Back to Godhead magazine, page by page, looking at all the pictures. And he finally, he stopped and he said, "So this is about God? And this is your God?" And he said, "Yep." And the man said to Pushkar, he said, "This stuff's so weird, it's got to be true." Well, the Srimad Bhagavatam is fully engaging. It tells the story of how one can transfer oneself from the material world to the spiritual world. For instance, I was just reading in the eighth canto about the Payavrata vow, how after the demigods had been kicked out of the heavenly planets and the demons took over, then Aditi, who wanted to redeem her son and bring back the demigods to their rightful place in the heavenly planets, she approached her husband Kashyapa to ask for a boon that she could have a son that would be able to rectify the situation. And he told her that she had to perform a vow called the Payavrata vow. And it's many of the components of this vow are things that we're used to, or at least are parallel with things that we're already doing. For instance, she would only drink milk for 8 days, and not that many of us do that, but there are other things like making sure to take a bath as soon as you wake up, and doing certain mantras, worshiping deities, being a little bit austere. And she performed this, and then of course the fruit was Vamdev took birth and took back the heavenly planets and everything else for that matter from Bali. Now, in the purports, Prabhupada points out that everybody in the modern day Krishna consciousness movement, just by following what's been given already, is already following the Payavrata. Not the exact Payavrata that's mentioned here, but he said it doesn't matter, it's the same thing. He said if you're following the process of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by, for instance, following four regular principles, chanting 16 rounds, going to see the deity, these are very normal things for all of us to do, right? To one degree or another. He said this is same thing, Payavrata. And he said by this yajna, by this vrata, everyone who's performing it will become liberated. It's an authorized process. And will be able to transfer him or herself back to the spiritual world. And what to speak of fulfilling all your desires. So the Sankirtan movement, which is now unfolding before our eyes, we're part of the history of the Sankirtan movement now. We're right in the middle of it. It's just manifested in the most noticeable way with Srila Prabhupada coming to America and then around the world and spreading the Sankirtan movement. That was just a few years ago. And then all of us came together, and there's this wave of Krishna consciousness spreading around the world to one degree or another in various places. So I'm saying this to indicate that it's a good idea to give oneself to the Sankirtan movement. And it doesn't require much adjustment in life, does it? I mean, this is a nice house. Better than nice, it's great. And you can live in the house, you can have some furniture, apparently. stick or two here or there. And the rest, basically, go on with your life, but integrate it and use everything that you already have for the service of the Sankirtan movement. We have the benefit here at ISV of having a very big fire pit going. Right now, coming off of 2018, we can really feel the heat of this transcendental fire, especially the fire of Sankirtan. There is a fire when you do yajna in the Sankirtan movement. Prabhupada told some of the devotees back in 1972, there was a big argument because the devotees first started going on traveling Sankirtan from San Francisco. That was the big temple, San Francisco. And they figured out if they would travel outwards to other cities by trucks and vans. They got themselves a bus, an old school bus, I believe, and converted it and started traveling and distributing Back to Godhead magazines. They were more and more successful. But then there were some questions about, was this actually the real devotional life, living on the road? Because after all, they weren't near deities anymore. You know, this was a new thing, because all the devotees lived in the temple. Not only that, how were they going to eat? Because when devotees lived in the temples back in the 70s, we get confirmation over here, true. When devotees lived in the temple back in the 70s, there wasn't anything else except the prasadam that came out, whenever it came out. And there was no separation of church and state back there. There's no difference. Everything was, devotees ate prasadam or nothing. And so when devotees went on the road, that this big controversy arose that, what are you guys going to eat? Because they were going in the store and buying something and then, you know, offering it to whatever way they could. But one side of the controversy said, you know, this is bogus. You guys aren't devotees anymore. You're not even following. You're eating boga or something. You know, this is sacrilege. And the other side said, you know, we're on Sankirtan. We have to do this yajna. So, and we have to eat, right? So they took it to Prabhupada. And actually, Prabhupada was in Los Angeles at the time, so some of the devotees from San Francisco drove down there with this burning question to ask him. And they put it before him. And he said that when you're in the fire of Sankirtan, you can offer everything in that fire of Sankirtan. There was no question, not even a hesitation for a nanosecond, that there was some, there was no hesitation at all in his part to say, you know, go ahead. Because this going out to preach Krishna consciousness, to give literature, Krishna conscious literature to others, to go door to door, to meet people in the streets, to go into their schools and give classes and tell people about Krishna, is directly the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's been perfectly customized for us through Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and therefore the fire is very strong. And you can offer everything into that fire and attain perfection in your life. That means so many of you put in tens of thousands of dollars into this last yajna. That's a very good thing to do, based on the fact that Vamanadev, you know, he'll appear one way or another in your life, just as he did for Bali Maharaj, and just said, and then it's like, uh-oh, you know what that means. One way or another, you have to give everything. I was just, we were traveling recently, and we were in Baltimore, and we met this very nice elderly gentleman who's just getting ready to leave his body. In fact, he's in the last stages. And we were fortunate to go over and meet him and develop a strong connection. And he was telling us that, you know, this is a very difficult time. There's a lot of suffering that comes at the end. And he was describing, it's not so much physical suffering, it's mental suffering. The mental suffering comes from our attachment to the things we think are ours. And he was saying it's very difficult to give up. And therefore, the benediction of the Sankirtan Yajna is that if you're able to divest yourself of your so-called possessions now, by giving them to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, number one, you'll become free from that burden and the suffering that it causes mentally. And you'll also become very dear to Lord Chaitanya, and you won't suffer at all. Whatever you give will be replaced manyfold by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's how he works. He takes care of his devotees. Devotees don't really care because they're so satisfied. Like Kulavicha Sridhar was one of the great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who lived in a thatched roof that was patched together because he had barely any money. His livelihood was selling banana leaf cups and other banana products. And bananas grow in Bengal, so it's not like there was a rare thing. But he was satisfied with his occupation. Nimai Pandit, used to come by every day and haggle with him and harass him, actually, and say, why are you cheating people? You actually have a big stash. You're the richest person in Bengal, and you're hiding it, he would tell him. He said, how much is this? And Kolevichi would tell him a price, and he said, no, I want it for less. And this Kolevichi was enchanted by this young boy, but at the same time, he was a little afraid of him because he was a Brahmana, and he would say, okay, you just take it. And then Nimai would say, no, I'll give you a fair price. Or some days he would say, okay, I'll take it as charity from you today. And when Mahaprabhu performed his Mahaprakash and revealed that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he began calling all his different devotees to come to Srivas Pandit's house, and he would tell things about each one of the devotees that only they could know. For instance, with one of the devotees who had been escaping some dacoits and had come to the Ganga and was thinking, he was with his children and his wife, he was thinking, I couldn't live through watching them being molested in front of me. Therefore, he was thinking, we'll all jump in the Ganges and drown, because no boats were available. It was late at night. And then a boat appeared, and the boatman said, get in. And at the time, he was saved. He was so relieved. And when he met Mahaprabhu during the Mahaprakash, Mahaprabhu said, that was me. I came as your boatman, and I took you across the river. Actually, he said, I took you across the river of birth and death, and will transport you back to Godhead. And that devotee was overcome with emotion and fell to the ground, crying, knowing that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so kind that he was guiding him and protecting him. And all the devotees had such an experience or an exchange with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Kolevichi Sridhar, when he came before Mahaprabhu, everyone called him, because Mahaprabhu said, bring Sridhar. And when Sridhar finally came, the devotees were a little surprised, because they knew him as the very poor salesperson of the banana leaf cups, and didn't know his greatness that hadn't been revealed at that time. But Mahaprabhu then began to offer him benedictions and saying, I'll make you a king. I'll make you an emperor. I'll give you untold wealth. And Sridhar kept saying, I don't want anything. I don't want that. The only thing I want is that adolescent boy comes and harasses me every day while I sell my banana leaf cups and spend half on worshiping the Ganga. So the devotees are fully satisfied. They don't need anything. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu always takes care of his devotees and makes sure that they have everything that they need. So one should feel free to fully invest oneself in the Sankirtan movement. All of one's intelligence can be utilized to expand it. All of one's resources can be used to help embellish it. And this is the way to live a life of complete abundance and opulence, is by giving to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially in the fire of the yajna of Sankirtan. We need to develop more Harinam, Sankirtan parties, literally parties, beautiful parties, well-designed, that will attract the attention of all the people of Silicon Valley in many places all over the Bay Area. We also need to expand book distribution. We have what is called a very good start. We're on our way to being the number one book distributing temple in the whole world, bar none. We've barely even tried yet. We're just starting to get organized, and we're just starting to realize our capacity. We have so much capacity, a resource of brain power and training and technical knowledge. What to speak of heart? And so by expanding the book distribution, using all technologies, all of the networking capabilities, marketing techniques, whatever there is. This is why I quoted the verse earlier. Idam hipum santapasashutasyava swistasya suktasya tibuddhidateyo. Narada Muni is saying, use everything, whatever you have, your intelligence, your learning, your resources, everything should be used to glorify Krishna. And the best way to do that in this age, especially right now, is to distribute transcendental literature and to expand the Harinam Sankirtan to attract people to come in, and also to give very well-reasoned discourses in many places all over the Bay Area and beyond about the process of Krishna consciousness so people can join and be happy. So on this official opening day, is this? We ask that all the residents of this transcendental home will always be fully invested in the Sankirtan movement, will experience the happiness of continual hearing and chanting from morning till night, and will have the great benediction of going back home, back to Godhead. Everyone agrees with this, please say Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna!
Well, the Hare Krishnas have it then. So, yes.
Chant the holy names, we maintain a temple, and we also eat prasadam. When we say Sankirtan movement, when someone asks me, what is your Sankirtan movement? What is the definition of that movement? What part of this is Sankirtan?
It's really the part that moves.
First of all, you have to have a sense of mission to have a Sankirtan, to have a movement. There's a way in which we have to be motivated by a sense of mission. That is, there's something to do, there's something to attain. And Prabhupada writes, if I may have that first canto back. Everybody know where it is?
It should be
right there. Right there only. Srivas Prabhu has one in his bag. The blue bag. He's moving fast. Blue book. Okay. Tie goes to the... Oh, it's close. Srila Prabhupada gives the sense of mission to all of us in the preface to his Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, we must know the present need of human society. And what is that need? Human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society. The ideals of spiritual communism, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, are based more or less on the oneness of the entire human society, nay, on the entire energy of living beings. Everyone okay? Can still hear?
Yes.
The need is felt by great thinkers to make this a successful ideology. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need in human society. It begins, therefore, with an aphorism of Vedanta philosophy, janmadyasya yataha, to establish the ideal of a common cause. Human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the fields of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large-scale quarrels, even over less important issues. There is a need of a clue as to how humanity can become one in peace, friendship, and prosperity with a common cause. Srimad Bhagavatam will fill this need, for it is a cultural presentation for the re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Re-spiritualization of the entire human society. Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges, for it is recommended by the great student devotee Prahlad Maharaj in order to change the demoniac face of society. Kumara acharat pragno dharman bhagavatam iha Dulabham Manusham Janma Tadapya Dhruvam Artadam. Disparity in human society is due to lack of principles in a godless civilization. There is God, or the Almighty One, from whom everything emanates, by whom everything is maintained, and in whom everything is merged to rest. Material science has tried to find the ultimate source of creation very insufficiently, but it is a fact that there is one ultimate source of everything that be. This ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in the beautiful Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the transcendental science not only for knowing the ultimate source of everything, but also for knowing our relation with Him and our duty towards perfection of the human society on the basis of this perfect knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada in this preface gives this sense that he came with of mission to re-spiritualize human society. There's a missing link that is causing people a lot of anxiety because it seems like everything should work, but it just doesn't. It doesn't fit together until you're able to connect it back to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And unless you have a clear idea of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then you get a fragmental information and a fragmented life also. So what is really required in the sense of mission is that we must, first of all, re-spiritualize ourselves, because we have to be representatives of the literature. It can't just be philosophized that here's the book, here's the religion. You actually have to exemplify it yourself. You have to become a person Bhagavat. And then we also have to show people how to live, how to transfer their assets and reform their lifestyle so that they can live in such a way that they can experience it for themselves. Otherwise, it also remains theoretical. So it has to be, that's our sense of mission. That's why we move heaven and earth every way we can to make available to the people of the world not only the information but also the practice. So that's worthwhile doing that. People dedicate their lives to many different causes. When Nirakula and I were just on our retreat, we ran into some birders. And they're very dedicated. They try to convert us, actually. We almost went with them. But their main focus in life was counting different varieties of birds. And, you know, they had all their equipment, and they were counting them and making records, and people all over the world do this. And there are other kinds of causes. Certainly many of them good causes, but there's one great cause, which is to know what the original source of everything is. Where do the birds come from in the first place? Bhagavatam says the birds represent the artistic sense of the personality of Godhead. Who knows that? Any other thing? Yes, Prabhu?
So would you say then that the Sankirtan movement is a mission to re-spiritualize society by bringing this Krishna culture to the, you know, to make the world one in peace and prosperity with a common cause of devotional service? Is that what the Sankirtan movement is?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's... That was the ambition of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta. The great acharyas want to see this actually take root all over the world. Prabhupada used to think in terms of if 1% of the population of the world could actually embrace the practice of Krishna consciousness, then there would be a systemic change all over the world. And he also pointed out that in the body of society, there's no head anymore because the brahmanas are non-existent. And therefore, the body without a head is in a perilous condition and is in danger of walking off a cliff if it hasn't already. And so he wanted to establish a class of people who understood our connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and not only that, knew how to apply it in their lives and could teach other people. So It seems like a very daunting task, and it is, but it's altogether possible by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we can depend on that. And that's how we actually make advancement. I think you need to turn the gain down a little bit because it's starting to feed back. Yes, Prabhu? I should hold it again.
So, it's a basic one question which has many answers, but there is, like, I'm giving Srimad Bhagavad Gita, which is 700 shloka, was spoken in 1 hour by Krishna to Arjuna at the same time 5,000 years ago. And Srimad Bhagavatam has 18,000 shloka. If you calculate based on the 700, it would take 26 hours. But it took seven days. So, is there something missing, or different punctuations happens? Because if you go in the same pace, because Prabhupada said many times that he is incessantly going on, Sukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj conversation. So what was the difference? Why
are you experimenting with this and trying it?
I'm trying to know that if
there is... Where's Ananda Vrindavan? I want verification that he's staying up 24 hours a day reading the Bhagavatam. He's doing? Yes? I don't know. He's not doing. You first try it and you come back and say if it. I don't know. It's these kinds of calculations are not as important as the bhava, the spirit of it. You know, of what took place there. There are many. We don't depend, like some philosophies depend on finding archaeological evidence of a particular time, place, but we don't need such evidence. We already have the axiomatic evidence of the Vedas and how it took place in chronological time. Even the Bhagavatam doesn't attempt to organize such things, to say it happened in a particular order, because as Prabhupada points out in the Bhagavatam itself, the point is to understand the purpose of the Bhagavatam and the bhava, the feeling behind it. The other kinds of calculations are not emphasized, really.
Like basically one section of the people then called Devi Bhagavatam. So they call different sections of Bhagavatam, and when there is an argument, you need to give certain evidence. Okay, then maybe, you know, we are missing some of the things. Devi Bhagavatam is the original one, and then we calculate all the kind of things. We need to be accurate in all dimensions. That's what I was thinking. There is any answer to that, so that we... Because when Prabhupada, at least more than 15 times, he has pointed out in his conversation about Bhagavad Gita to 1 hour complete, like basically 52 times something. It is intense 1 hour conversation and it is 7 days. So comparing with the same 5,000 years ago, the meter and the language won't take that long.
Okay, Gandharvika has an answer, and so does the Karanath Prabhu. Go ahead. Okay, so I'm the one who brought up that you should use your scientific minds for this, so it's my fault that I invited this. Go ahead.
You know, if we have a recording of just the Sanskrit of the Bhagavatam, see how long it is. And then, you know, there are times when Shukadeva Goswami was in ecstasy, and there must have been times when there were pauses and things like that, even though they weren't stopping to eat or drink or sleep. You know, in fact, it's said that, why didn't he save Radharani? It was because he might have been, you know, lost external consciousness for a long time and would be able to complete the recital before the snake bird came. So. But I think along those lines, it may actually take longer to recite the whole Bhagavatam in Sanskrit than you think by, say, an hour for 700 verses, and now there's 18,000 verses. Even how you can't count verses may be difficult because there are long prose sections, and they're much long. Most of the verses are longer meter anyway. I mean, there aren't that many verses.
Shrivas Pandit would like to comment on this.
So, Bhagavatam was compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, and he foresaw this particular concept. He gave us what he thought was the essence. So, the underlying assumption with all these facts or arguments is that every single word that was spoken between Shukla Goswami and Maharaj Parikshit is recorded, which might or might not, because we don't have a complete evidence that was it. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said this is the one that is from the Quran, so we accept it.
Okay. And there are larger Bhagavatams elsewhere, as confirmed in the Tathasandarbha by Jiva Goswami,
say that verses, and there are Bhagavatams in the heavenly planets and other places that have millions of verses. And just for our supply chain management, we're lucky we have the condensed version. Prabhu? Nanayanat paraksarve nukutashchana bhibhyati swarga pavarga narakeshu apituliyarta darshana. Of course, the devotees who are fully engaged in service consider wherever they are to be tulya, because they're already in the Dham by dint of their practice of devotional service. They're connected to the Dham. If one can make a connection with the Dham, then this is an important aspect of devotional service. I've seen that it requires a little bit of cultivation. Some people, when they go to the Dham, if they're not familiar with it, they get a little disoriented even, and it's hard for them to appreciate it. Sometimes it takes a few visits to the Dham and spending some time there, doing some service in the Dham, to actually appreciate it and be accommodated there. Prabhupada once said, you should live in the Dham for either 3 days or 3 years. And he explained that if you're not there to do service, then stay for 3 days so you don't make any offenses, and then come back to your other service. If you have legitimate service in the Dham, you should stay longer. But devotees like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj showed that Prabhupada created Dhams many places around the world. He deliberately stayed in Gita Nagari, which was a Dham that Prabhupada inaugurated. Bhavadgita Bhagavatas Tirtha Bhuta Swayam Vibho Tirtha Kurvanti Tirthani Swantakstena Gadabrita. This Yudhishthira Maharaj confirmed when he spoke to Vidura that a pure devotee carries the Dham within his heart, or he carries Krishna within his heart, or love of Krishna within his heart, and wherever he goes, he creates the Dham. Not only that, the pure devotees purify the Dhams when they go there, because everyone else goes and leaves their sins. So there's a case to be made that those who are fully engaged in devotional service, and the places where the devotees are engaged in full devotional service, are Dhams. And at least for devotees who are consummate preachers like Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, staying in Gita Nagari and leaving his body from there was tulya, was equal to being in Vrindavan. What to speak of those who give up their body in the course of doing service? This is also mentioned in the Shastra that if you're engaged in pure devotional service, you're chanting Hare Krishna, you're teaching others, and then you happen to die on the battlefield. We can quote the verse from this morning about Vayura Nilam Amritam Atedam Bashmandam Shariram Om Krato Smara Kritam Smara Krato Smara Kritam Smara, that the devotees don't need Krishna to see them in the Dham. He knows everything that they're doing and he makes up for it. Yes.
Very close to Harrisburg, and Radhana Maharaj went to pick them up, and they led a beautiful kirtan for Bhakti Dev Maharaj. They brought garlands from Srimati Radharani from Barsana. They got tulsi. So Vrindavan actually just manifested because of his intense desire and his. He actually stood by the principle that every temple that Srila Prabhupada started with. And because he believed in it so firmly, Srimad Radharani just, the Dham just manifested in there. It was just extraordinary.
Yes. Yes,
Prabhu. One question, any service, especially in context to book distribution, Sankirtan. Sometimes, you know, while doing this services, we need to be real passionate about it. Especially, you know, in order to run it and execute it, you need a lot of what we say is passion. And the person, you know, the goal is to even go beyond goodness and eventually devotional bhakti is achieved even beyond goodness. I was a little surprised when someone said that, you know, book distribution is kind of in the mode of passion. So what is your, you know, is devotional service in general and distribution in particular done so that you can do something better, or can that be the goal of the life? Because depending on one's skills and you know, likings, and depending on the order received from spiritual master and higher authorities, one takes that as the goal of the life. So is that sufficient, or should that be taken as a step to achieve, maybe, you know, chanting with complete samadhi or something?
Well, Prabhupada traveled around the world 14 times. One with mundane vision might say,
an endeavor to fly on jet planes all over the world. But what was his purpose? Because, as I mentioned in the very first part of the talk, when one engages any material energy, including one's body and mind, in Krishna's service, it's not material, it's transcendentalized. I gave Shastric evidence to prove that. And the kind of endeavor that one sees from those, for instance, who are developing systems to distribute books, is not the material motive passion, it's transcendental. Prabhupada confirmed this when a disciple asked him about how devotees sometimes feel an anxiety because of the service, especially book distribution. He said, you have to go out, we're talking about results. And he said, sometimes devotees get an anxiety, and Prabhupada said, please tell them that this is spiritual anxiety. And he said that Yashoda has taken the position of the mother of Krishna, and therefore she has anxiety 24 hours a day. Because as every mother knows, the children cause a lot of anxiety because you're always worried about them. What to speak of Krishna? You know, he was a real rascal in getting into everything. So she was in anxiety, but Prabhupada said this is transcendental anxiety. So any endeavor that's made to perform devotional service, there are two aspects to this cultivation of devotional service, as based on the verse given by Rupa Goswami, where he says, Anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karma anyanavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktirutama. So this verse means that devotional service is a cultivation, and he emphasizes the verb, shil. Anushilanam. Shil is the verb which means a cultivation. There's something you actually have to do. And then he divides that into two categories. He said one is internal, where you actually meditate on Krishna in different ways. And he said then the other one is external, where you're performing the various activities of devotional service. For instance, ringing a bell, worshipping the deity, and our acharyas, for instance, headed by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, say that means also following the footsteps of Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. They were notably eternal associates of Lord Krishna in the spiritual world in a very intimate way. And in the material world, when they manifest their pastimes, they are performing activities. For instance, they're writing books. They wrote many books. This is something that one might interpret as a very worldly thing to do. They also excavated holy places. They might have, if they had back then, they would be wearing hard hats at the, you know, site, the equivalent to whatever they had back there. They were mixing it up. They were also building temples. That requires money changing hands, big money. If you look at those temples that they built, Radha Madan Mohan and Govindaji temples, they're very expensive. So they were dealing with all kinds of people. Jiva Goswami did all the legal work himself to protect those temples. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that all these we're meant to emulate. These are activities of the spiritual world. They're not material activities. And so one thing leads to another as well. And Prabhupada preached this based on the song and other verses from Narottam Das Thakur, Gaurang Gera Dhuti Pada, where Narottam Das Thakur says, if you dive into the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which Prabhupada said means this chanting, dancing, spreading the Sankirtan movement all over the world, then you'll come out on the shore of the ocean of the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And so this idea that going out in book distribution, driving around town, meeting people, exchanging money, this is some passionate, materially passionate activity, and that someday when we become really real devotees, actually, we'll go sit down somewhere and just chant Hare Krishna. Well, nothing wrong with sitting down and chanting Hare Krishna, but actually the spreading of Krishna consciousness itself is an internal meditation and a practice which was performed by the Goswamis externally. And it also, very importantly, leads to this internal meditation. Because what books are we distributing, Prabhupada says in his Bhagavatam purport? We're distributing Krishna's books. So when you're doing that, you're thinking about Krishna. Who else would take their life and money to distribute Bhagavad Gita's? You could sell anything and you make a lot more money. But we're not interested in money. We're interested in Krishna. And that's why we take the trouble. So it's not, it has nothing to do with the material world at all. And it is a pathway to a spontaneous devotional service. By investing one's life in the Sankirtan movement, one will come to the point of developing the higher stages of devotional service through which one will be qualified to think of Krishna 24 hours a day. Prabhu? He's adding to the point. Prahlad Maharaj never said, who wants to go to the forest?
No, he says, whoever wants to go to the forest, let them be.
Whoever wants to go to the forest, just let them be.
But I would like to stay here in the city.
He said, I want to go to the most congested places on the earth planet, in the cities, and passionate places, and save the poor souls. Prahlad Maharaj is our exemplar of devotional service beyond the modes of material nature. And this is his desire. To, as Prabhupada writes in that section, Srivas Prabhu is here, he can confirm, that Prabhupada says it is the mission of the Hare Krishna movement to go door to door. He actually says that. He says, that's our ambition, to go door to door to give people an opportunity to start Krishna consciousness. Good one, Srivas Prabhu. Yes? Payavrata. Yes. Oh, yes. In fact, because everything is there within the Hare Krishna mantra. Iti soda shakam namnam kali kalnasya nashanam. If you take advantage of the Paramaksharakrite, the supreme combination of syllables, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, this is the best of all yajnas. Nikila Shruti Mali Ratnamali Dhuti Nirajita Pada Pankachanta Ai Mukta Kaleru Pasyamanam Paritascham Harinama Samshriyami. All the Vedas are pointing to the Hare Krishna Mantra and saying this is the ultimate of all the kinds of yajna that one can perform. So this is one of the main points that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to make, is by this chanting of Hare Krishna, you perform all other kinds of yajna. And it is the best. It's the best of all the different kinds of vows you can take. In fact, it's very difficult to perform many of the detailed kinds of vows that one sees in this age of Kali. But it's not necessary if one takes shelter of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Therefore, Jiva Goswami gives this edict that for us Vaishnavas, before we perform any kind of ritualistic ceremony, we should chant Hare Krishna at the beginning and the end. That makes sure that it'll be successful. Other evidence, when Prabhupada opened the Krishna Balaram Mandir in Vrindavan in 1975, he invited Smarta Brahmins to come there to perform the rituals. And he also invited all us Westerners to come there and chant Hare Krishna in big, huge, uproarious kirtans. And afterwards, he said, we really didn't need the Smarta Brahmins at all. He was straightforward about that. He said, the only reason I invited them was because the people and local people wouldn't have accepted that we opened a temple and we installed deities. But Prabhupada said, the only ritual that was necessary was the Harinam Sankirtan at that time. Akurnath Prabhu and then Mataji.
So on this point, I mean, aside from the Srimad Bhagavatam and the vows that are there, in Vedic society, in other Puranas, some of them are, you know, the Puranas that are in the mode of goodness or the mode of passion or the mode of ignorance. But there's all kinds of vows that Hindu people faithfully perform to protect their husbands, their brothers, the different things that are like, there's festivals and throughout the year that people are very fond of. And now that so many of our devotees actually come from that Vedic culture, how should we feel about, you know, about those? And I know Western devotees that have Christmas and they have trees and they have presents under the tree and things like that. I mean, they even preserve these non-Vedic traditions. But how do we see... look at that in terms of pure devotional service versus paramahansa?
Well, for those who are fully focused on advancing the spiritual life,
their concern and using their time is to be connected to the primary activities of devotional service. There may be some momentum from their previous life that obligates them to take care of family traditions, and if not taken care of, those will cause more disturbance in their life than attending to them. Then, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did advise his disciples, then they should go and take care of them, because oftentimes families really become disturbed. For instance, people I notice become really disturbed if you show up for some important kind of function, right? Technically, devotee isn't obligated to these things. Devarshi bhutapna nrinam pitrinam nakinkaro nayam ranicha rajam, etc. But one should be intelligent to not overly disturb the minds of other people that you're obligated to live with. However, if you start thinking that those things supersede the chanting of Hare Krishna, for instance, you know, somebody went to a funeral and the family priest said, you know, you can't chant Hare Krishna for 10 days because that's a mantra that you can't say after a funeral. We don't follow that. And if you do follow that, then you're committing an offense, because then you're thinking that actually these other kinds of rituals that people do, without understanding how they're connected to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that you think that they're more important to follow those, then this is an offense against the holy name, because the holy name is supreme. Matak paratanam nanyat kinchid asti dananjaya mai sarvam idam protam sutre manigana iva. Krishna is the supreme. There's nobody that's above him. There's no ritual that can supersede the chanting of his names. So that's how one could balance these things. And ultimately, one's not obligated. However, the Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tavat karmana kuruvita na nirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadova shriyava najayate. Until that time that one has awakened a full taste in the chanting of Hare Krishna, there are certain rituals that one should attend to in the Varnashram and so forth. But when one comes to that point, then one's fully free to just engage in chanting Hare Krishna. Mataji. Is everybody okay? You've been sitting here a long time. But you guys are amazing.
All right, go ahead.
We want to see if we can do it in 7 days.
Okay, go ahead.
Forbid us reading Acharya's books.
Because reading the Acharya's books?
Yeah, because when we give books to some of the devotees, many of them say, I'm not qualified and I have
You give to, which books to the devotees?
Like Lalita Madhava, Vidagdha Madhava, or Gopala Chambu,
and all these things. Lalita Madhava?
When we get qualified to read these books.
When do we get qualified to read them? Well, the answer that Prabhupada gave to
that is everything else, because this conversation came up when the devotees first went to India and they discovered that there were all kinds of books available. And it's kind of natural, you know, that one might think, well, I'll read these other things and then I'll get ahead of everybody else. I'll know something they won't know. And this controversy arose because one of the temple presidents in India then forbade any of the devotees to collect or read any of the extra books that they were finding that were outside of ISKCON books. So, again, they brought the controversy to Prabhupada. This is recorded in the Veda base. And they said, Prabhupada, there were two factions there. Prabhupada, you had said, don't read the books of the previous Acharyas. Prabhupada said, I said? I did not say. I said, you should read the books of the previous Acharyas. But I said, you assimilate first what you already have. Now my question is, who's actually assimilated the Bhagavad Gita? I mean, I don't know that many people who are fully conversant with Bhagavad Gita. What to speak of the Bhagavatam? We just came back from Vrindavan recently and we spent at least 5 hours a day reading Bhagavatam for a month. And when I walked away from that experience, and every year when we walk away from the experience, I think, I couldn't even scratch the surface. The more I read intensely in the Bhagavatam, the more I realize that I haven't assimilated practically anything. How many verses from the Bhagavatam do I know? Just a smattering of verses. How much of the actual import of Bhagavatam and how everything connects together do I know? So Prabhupada's answer to that was assimilate what you have first. And the answer to becoming qualified to read all these things has to do with receiving the mercy of the six Goswamis, Prabhupada says. And that comes after one has dedicated one's life to practicing devotional service sincerely, controlling one's senses, helping, doing the hard work of spreading the Sankirtan movement. Then one is noticed and given mercy to enter into these things. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur didn't allow his disciples, his erudite scholar disciples, to keep a library in their room. Did you know that? They weren't able to keep a library because he didn't want them to become bookworms and become absorbed like that, that we know everything. He also restricted them from reading many of these different kinds of books. So we should basically, the bottom line is, hate to use that term, it's very, we should assimilate what we have already. And if you make a try at that, you'll notice that everything is there, necessary. So we'll take the last point from His Grace Radhakripa Prabhu.
Last year, he attended a funeral ceremony in India. His uncle passed away.
Maternal. Suddenly, I saw there is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra chanting, and there is another funeral body was coming, and I was totally stunned in that cremation in a place where Hare Krishna is being chanted. So then one person actually gave a nice comment. He said, "We love Hare Krishna. You guys are sincere. You guys are, if there's a birth, you chant Hare Krishna. If there's a marriage, you chant Hare Krishna. If somebody dies, there's Hare Krishna. No confusion."
ISV, there's a birth, there's book distribution, there's a funeral, there's big book distribution. So, the fact that devotees are settling down here in the Bay Area, buying expensive real estate and dedicating their lives, Hari Sankirtan Prabhu and his family drive hours to come over to ISV to what? Wash dishes, clean the floor, carry out the prasadam, serve it out, organize without... organize the gift shop, and they do it selflessly. These kinds of devotees, or these devotees particularly, in the midst of the greater society here, actually have an impact on the world. The fact that they're walking on this earth, performing this level of service, has a big effect. And that all of you are doing the same thing in various places around the Bay Area has a huge effect. So keep settling down. Go for the long term here in the Bay Area. It's the best way to get noticed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we intend to keep working together to expand Sankirtan movement until there's a breakthrough here in the Bay Area that is noticeable all over the world, that will shock the world, the shot heard around the world from here in Silicon Valley. Everyone who agrees with this idea, please say Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna! Kripasindavevicha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha Hari Sankirtan Dham ki jai Go premanande Nitai Gaura Haribo Haribo Haribo, Nitai Gaura, Haribo, Nitai Gaura, Haribo, Bo, Haribo, Nitai Gaura, Haribo. Okay, I would say I was about to say Sharira Vijajal, but.
Should I do it? Let's see what happens.
Okay, also we have a lot of prasadam in the garage and tea also in the garage. Please help yourself.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Hare
Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare
Stop. Shila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Ki Jai Bharati Gaudi Vaishnavi Ki Jai Namashari Shila Hari Das Thakur Ki Rings of the Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Radhara Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vini Ki Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopabina Shamakum Radhakum Ki Gaur Radhan Ki Shri Vrindavan Dham Ki Shri Mayapur Navadip Dham Ki Shri Raghunath Puri Dham Ki Tulsi Devi Bhakti Devi Ki Jumur Devi Ganga Devi Ki Sambeda Bhakti Vrindi Ki Our glorious assembly of devotees Our glorious assembly of devotees Our glorious assembly of devotees Gopremanande Namaste Nara Srinivaya Lala Dara Naine Srinivaya Shikura Bhakshara Shikura Kalaye Shikura Sankara Kalaye Shikura Yato Yamita Tony Shinha, Yamita Tony Shinha,
Om Namo Bhagavate Narasimhaya Namaste Daste Daste Adhirajin Bhava Ajranaka Vajranaska Namasaya Namaya Namaya Namo Prasa Prasa Om Svaha Avayam Avayam Atani Vishta Om Shri
Man.
Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Hey, Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman. Natari Armarman.